and gentlemen, you are now listening to the Scare Blast podcast. And now here's your host, Lisa Burton.
Hey everybody, welcome to Scare Blast podcast. I'm your host, Lisa Burton, and today I am here with director about Chicago, Miss Annalise Toft. Hello, Annalise.
Hey, Lisa.
Hey.
I did it really officially. Which, yeah.
That was very official.
Thank you. I'm pretty official sometimes.
It was very sidekicky.
Yeah.
Like, hey, Lisa.
Hey, Lisa. Yeah. And I'm the, yeah. Nope.
Annalise chose to watch the movie The Omen, which is a 1976 movie, sort of demonic in nature. Mm-hmm. This is such a great movie. Can you tell me? I have a couple of questions for you.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Do you like scary movies?
Yes, a lot.
You do?
Yeah, I for sure do.
And when you reach for a scary movie, what kind do you reach for?
So it really depends. I'm most likely to reach for, like, camp, or, like I grew up in Mystery Science Theater, so I'm most likely to reach for, like, absurd or bad scary movies that, like, I can riff on, or where it's, like, a social experience to watch them.
Yeah.
But when I really want to be scared, I like, suspense-y psychological stuff. Like, I like Negative Space, like, Sonic, I like things where I'm like, oh god, oh god, oh god, oh god, oh yeah.
Yeah. So like slasher movies?
I grew up on all those, but I think I actually really like terrifying, like haunted things. Mm-hmm. I like, is the ghost gonna, like, what's in the closet things.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about Babadook. I like that a lot. Mm-hmm. I like what's going on. Movies where you're trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
It's like, as opposed to when's it gonna, I know what it is, when's it gonna jump out. It's like, is it real? Is it actually coming? When's it coming?
Yeah.
I saw It Follows earlier this summer, and that was like, super up my alley.
Yeah, it's real good. Yeah. This movie is The Omen.
Yeah.
And it's really good. Will you summarize it for me?
Yeah, sure. So, imagine super handsome, silver foxy Gregory Peck.
Oof.
Just picture him for a second. Okay, so he's the ambassador to... He's eventually the ambassador to England, but at the time was the ambassador to Rome at the top of it.
Mm-hmm.
He's in Rome, and he and his wife have a baby and lose that baby in childbirth. And so then a priest in Rome offers him another baby, and it's essentially like, this baby looks kind of like your baby. Your wife, you don't even have to tell your wife, which, like, makes me think, like, did she not know the baby died? Just kidding? Anyway.
Yeah.
So they decide to take home, this priest offers him a baby. He adopts it as his own, and they kind of, like, fudge all the adoption paperwork so nobody really knows it's adopted. And so then they start to raise this child. There are, like, a few, like, loosely weird incidents, but mostly pretty chill childhood until the kid's 8th birthday, something like that. So the kid's birthday party, when he's still pretty young and chubby-cheeked, he's, like, going around on a carousel at their fancy house. Now they're the ambassador to England, and the nanny commits suicide, like, in the name of this child, whose name is Damien, which, like... Come on.
Yeah.
So then a priest comes and says, like, tells Gregory Peck that Damien's the Antichrist, and he doesn't believe it. And then there's a photographer who's like, I have some suspicious facts about this as well. Until eventually things go bananas-er until at the end, like, a bunch of people in Gregory Peck's life have died, and he's like, maybe my son is the Antichrist. Oh no! So then he goes to Rome and he meets priests, and he eventually meets an exorcist who tells him the only way to stop it is to kill his son, and gives him, like, a bunch of stabby stuff to go, like, stab the Antichrist out of his child. And he refuses until he confirms that he does in fact have in his hair, he has the brand of 666, the sign of the Antichrist, just in his little hair, on his little scalp. And then Gregory Peck tries to kill his son, and was a spoiler. We're going to talk about it. He doesn't get to, so the Antichrist lives.
Yeah, it is. This movie is really great. It is. It was crazy because I sort of felt like there was a really stark turning point in this movie to where it almost became two movies. Because up until we find out that Damien is, in fact, the Antichrist.
Confirmed 100%. Like, until the scalpy thing? When do you feel like it's confirmed?
Yeah, I felt like it was confirmed when the dog wouldn't leave. I think, to me, when Mrs. Baylock had that dog and she wouldn't let it leave, that's when it was confirmed for me. Because I could, realistically, I was like, okay, Mrs. Baylock shows up out of fucking nowhere, and she's clearly suspicious.
Yeah.
I felt like the parents in this movie were really stupid.
I'm gonna go with you. So Mrs. Baylock is the nanny that shows up, 20 minutes in when we start to suspect that Damien's Antichrist, and is just like, I'm here to replace the old nanny who killed herself. And nobody, they're just like, oh, thank God, a new nanny.
Yeah.
There's so many things in this movie when it happens that the parents are just like, okay.
Yeah.
Like,
and that woman, his wife, Mrs. Catherine Thorne, she's treated so shitty the whole movie and left in the dark about her own body. It was so misogynistic that there were points where I just tuned out.
Yeah, well, one point where they're like, the Antichrist won't let your wife give birth to another heir, so he's going to try to kill the baby. And so basically she is asking her husband for permission for an abortion.
Uh-huh.
Like, will you agree to an abortion? Like, who?
Yeah, who says? And he...
And I would like you to be on board with this choice that I'm making, but will you please allow me to have an abortion?
And he says no. He's like, no. Or he tells the doctor or somebody no.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm not going to allow her to do
that. And he gets mad at her psychologist for talking about it all like a little, yeah, it's that super, although it's one of the only movies that I have ever seen that isn't like a documentary or a political piece on the subject of abortion that openly has a character discussing having an abortion.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought that was just in the 70s too. She's just like, please agree to an abortion. And she uses the word abortion. They don't euphemistically talk around it. They don't dodge around it. She asks specifically for an abortion.
It makes me wonder if abortions were legal in England at that time. I don't know the answer to that.
When was Roe versus Wade? 67?
Earlier than that. Earlier than 76.
Yeah.
So
I feel like I should know the answer to that off the top of my head.
Me too. We all should. Ladies and gentlemen, we are bad examples. We should know Roe v. Wade.
Mm-hmm.
Are you afraid of creepy kids?
Yes, I'm terrified of creepy kids.
You are? Why? Why are you afraid of creepy kids? I don't think I am.
Because I think the protection of perceived innocence, right? That, like, if a kid is evil, no one will believe you. That's part of it.
Uh-huh.
That it's unexpected from them. They're supposed to be innocent.
Yeah.
I think that's a huge... That they would, like, kill you while smiling.
Huh.
Like, that they don't know... That I think that's part of it.
Yeah, maybe just the...
like you're just a like that they Lenny from Of Mice and Menu.
Yeah,
like I don't know what this sharp thing does and stab you in the guts.
Yeah, that's interesting. Or I was thinking about it earlier today too, that it might just be a sort of a an unexpected, like when you hear a child laughing in the dark, that is an unexpected sound to hear in the dark. If you hear something growling in the dark, that's scary, but in the way that is expected.
Yeah, like all of your ancestors, like all of your evolution has trained you to know how to fight or flight to growl in the dark.
Exactly, but you don't know how to fight or flight.
No, your brain doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. I still think I'm just not really
scared. Not afraid of creepy kids?
I'm not afraid of creepy kids.
Like if you were like hanging out with a kid, and they were, like, playing, and then their parents left the room, and they were like, I'm going to kill you, and no one will believe you. And, like, the kid and the parents came back in.
Uh-huh.
Does that scare the shit out? Like, does that idea scare you?
No, because I'd be like, what do you mean? And I would keep trying to talk to them while the parents were in the room. I don't know. I would nanny the hell out of those kids.
Yeah.
I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, you're right. That is it is a creepy thought. It's one of those things that... I don't know. It's just somebody in horror movies across the board, someone is always gaslit. Someone sees something, says something, and then is told what you're saying is wrong.
Yeah.
Because X, Y, and Z is true, right? And then you're like, yeah, but that's why I'm telling you, because it's out of the ordinary.
Yeah.
It's not normal. And then they are, and then people are like, yeah, but you're wrong.
Yeah.
You know?
I think one of the most frightening things about creepy children isn't just creepy children. It's not like a random creepy child. It is the idea, like, have you ever, I don't know, I've had conversations with friends like this. Like, what if you had a child, and that child grew up to be a school shooter?
Yeah, man.
What would you do?
Yeah.
How would you handle it? This thing you've loved your whole life, and you did your best, and then now the world turns to you and go, what did you do that they're this?
Right. Yeah, it does seem to always fall on the parents. Like, that sort of blame or whatever does always fall on them.
Like, there's nothing you... And then what if there's nothing you can do?
Right.
What if this thing that you've loved your whole life is, like, truly evil, and you can't save them, and you can't fix them, and you can't love them out of it?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what does that mean? That, I think, is also the fundamental fear.
Yeah.
I feel like it's less just a random scary child is going to hurt me, but in more like, what would you do if your child was a killer?
Yeah. That is scary. That is scary. Are you ready to rate this movie?
Yes, let's do it.
Okay. We're going to rate it out of Rottweilers. How many Rottweilers would you give this movie? 10 Rottweilers means it's a great movie. You would recommend it to everyone. 0 to 1 Rottweilers is like, nope, you would never ever watch this movie again.
8 Rottweilers.
8 Rottweilers.
Yeah.
Why 8?
I think it's a really, especially for the time, but I think it's an excellent patient psychological thriller, and I think, or like horror movie, and I think it has like almost like, I don't want to give it to, oh no, but like the director of this is a baller.
Yeah.
So like, I've like, he directed Goonies and Superman, so like, this guy, like, I have no problem being like, this guy knows what the hell he's doing.
And like, the original Superman.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Christopher Reeve Superman. He also directed Toys, and we can talk later about why I like that.
Yeah.
I think that it's patient, almost Hitchcockian level patience.
Mm-hmm.
And like those moments where she's about to like fall.
Yeah.
I think like the way the shots are set up, there's so much subtext to the way it's made.
Yeah.
So I think it's really patient and lovely and genuinely so scary, and also like film history, horror history wise,
mm-hmm.
and like soundtrack wise, worth watching.
Yeah.
The reason I'd say like recommend it to everyone, only 8 out of 10, is I'm gonna say like, just because it's made in the 70s, like when the guy gets decapitated, I'm watching it intellectually, not emotionally. Does that make sense? I'm
yeah.
like, holy crap, look at this effect they did.
Yeah.
As opposed to actually being afraid of, like, as opposed
being decapitated or, yeah. like, the fear of that action. Yeah. yeah.
Most of the things in that movie, there are a few moments that genuinely do scare me in this
uh-huh.
movie. But most of them, I watch it, like, I can't remove my historical filter from it.
Uh-huh.
And that it's not so amazing that you watch it now and you're like, if this came out now, it would change my life.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
But I would... So, I would, if you're not a person who enjoys watching, like, if you don't like to go back and, like, watch Kurosawa to understand, like, Westerns or whatever.
Yeah.
Then maybe, if you don't like to go back and watch 70s horror to understand modern horror,
uh-huh.
like, maybe you won't find this worth your time.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it was, I would give it 8 for similar reasons, but also, I think it's a fun Friday night movie. I would pick this movie up and be like, I'm just gonna throw this on because this is fun. But I do think unlike other horror movies that are easily tuned out and tuned back in, I think this is a watch all the way through kind of one.
Where yeah.
You kind of have to be on your game and watch the whole
thing.
I
agree.
You can't just tune out and know what's going on because there are so many different scene changes from place to place. And I mean, they go from the house out to the yard, to the zoo, to the Middle East, to
yeah.
Rome. I mean, they go everywhere in this movie.
And sometimes things are happening simultaneously. Like,
yeah.
Oh, Greg picks in Rome while his wife's back home.
Yeah.
I've been listening too much Hamilton, and I'm so sorry. But, like,
Greg Peck's in Rome while his wife's in home. And the legends of Zion and something and Pion. I don't know. Isn't that like this, the poem?
Yeah. Yep. This, we just wrote the better poem.
The better poem.
Yeah, but yeah, it is a lot to follow. Like the new, and there are lots of secondary and tertiary characters that are relevant that you have to like retain. And,
yeah. The priests. There are too many priests for me to not just say the priest. Priest number one.
One of them was one of the Doctor Who's.
Oh yeah, I did recognize that. Cool. Mm-hmm.
So we had the professor from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 slash the guy, that dude from Tron, and we had a Doctor Who. So it's pretty exciting.
Are you ready for trivia?
Yeah, sure. Okay, let's do it.
Okay. Here we go. When the fishbowl falls to the ground in that scene where she's changing the plants or the light bulb or something, she falls. What was used in place of actual goldfish? No goldfish were harmed in the making of this film.
That's really funny.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't... Okay, here's where I'm going to guess for the sake of our entertainment.
Okay.
Not a goldfish cracker.
Okay.
What's kind of shiny and... cellophane? Crumpled cellophane.
That's a great guess. They were sardines. Like, they just got a pack of sardines, and they painted it orange. Because they didn't want to kill a goldfish, so they went and they got just, like, plain old pack of sardines and painted that shit gold.
Somebody killed those sardines. Yeah. The same number of fish were killed in the making of this movie, you guys. But if you buy it, you're part of the sardine killing.
Guys, Annalise is running her own personal campaign to stop sardine killings.
I'm just saying that, like, know what you're doing. When you buy a steak, you killed a cow. And that's fine. Just know it happened.
And when you buy a pack of sardines, you kill a school. Am I right? Bringing it back to school shootings? Is that not cool?
That's yeah. Let's have some sweet school shooting callbacks. Let's tag a school shooting bit and run it through this podcast.
Here we go. Jerry Goldsmith was the musical composer for The Omen.
Yeah.
For which he won an Academy Award.
Yeah.
But for what Disney cartoon film did he also compose music?
Oh, cool.
It's one that you know.
It is?
Uh-huh. It's one that everybody knows.
Oh, man.
It's like, it was like sort of toward the end of sort of that golden 90s
Beauty and
Disney.
Beauty and the Beast?
Beauty and the Beast is a great guess. Came out way after Beauty and the Beast, though.
After? Mm-hmm. Mulan.
Mulan!
Really?
Yes, absolutely.
Hell yeah.
Yep. All right. Damien has 666 on his head. It was mentioned that 666 was also on the priest, too, on one of the priests. Do you remember where that priest said the 666 was on him?
Nope. Inside his mouth.
No, it was inside his thigh. It was on the inner side of his right thigh.
Did they show it to you?
No. But
he says it.
He says it, and it's the weirdest. Like, I couldn't... And I was, that's kind of why I mentioned it, because I also couldn't figure out if that meant then... If the 666 was the omen, if that was
the omen that the Antichrist is coming is
the 666, and that we're seeing that everywhere. Yeah. You know, we're seeing it. It's the date that he was born, which also apparently this kid came out of a dog.
He was born out of a dog?
Yeah, he was born out of a dog, and when they went to the...
A Rottweiler?
Uh-huh.
What if he was born out of a dachshund, but Rottweiler's just like him?
That'd be really cute. It'd be, like, really sweet. Would you like that creepy
kid? Yeah, you can't kill a boy who comes out of a dachshund.
But Rottweilers, like, love him, and all other animals hate him.
Yeah. What a weird... Yeah. But I wonder if other dogs like him, we just only saw Rottweilers, even when we're in a graveyard in Rome.
Maybe he's just a dog boy. They got him all wrong.
Oh no, he was just born of a dog.
He's just born of a dog. But he accidentally killed that other baby.
I mean, it's not... The baby died. He didn't, like, do it.
No, right.
I mean, his existence, I don't know. Oh, he killed his would-be brother, too, though, too. Like, the one that was going to be born by knocking his mom off that ledge.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He did.
She miscarried. It was real sad.
Yikes.
Okay, so...
But it's what she wanted.
Yeah.
So maybe he was just doing her a favor, too. Maybe he overheard. Maybe he's really sweet.
Maybe he could just help. He's gonna definitely grow up to be a school shooter. Buy him a trench coat now.
Oh, guys.
I'm keeping this runner alive.
Runner. Stretch. Woo. All right. What trivia do you have?
Okay, ready?
Yeah.
So, Mrs. Baylock, played by Billy Whitelaw.
Okay.
With what, like, I don't even know how to put this, American artistic icon is she associated?
Ooh. American artistic icon.
Uh-huh.
I'm gonna guess.
I could be more specific, but I don't wanna, like, that'll...
Yeah, Jackson Pollock?
No, but that'd be cool as hell.
Yeah.
no, she was apparently a muse to Samuel Beckett.
Whoa.
She was one of the primary artistic, like, interpreters of his work.
Whoa.
Yeah, so, like, she was in tons and tons of Beckett's original works.
That is really funny. And it also
and she has a very
so
limited filmography, but a huge stage
repertoire.
Yeah. Plus, she has tiny teeth.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with anything. I just wanted to point out that I think her teeth are weirdly small and her bangs are weirdly poofy.
She's a weird-looking woman.
She's a weird-looking... She's one of those people who, like, if pressed, you would say she's, like, like, all of her proportions, like, everything about her is theoretically attractive.
Right.
But something's off.
Yeah.
Like, so it looks like somebody took an attractive person and, like, smushed them. And, like, did something weird to them.
Yeah. Oh, no.
But that's the perfect kind of person to be creepy.
Yeah.
Because you can't pinpoint what makes her odd.
Yeah, she's wearing kind of old-timey...
Garb.
Yeah.
And then she's really... Not mall, they're like mall bangs, but thinner. Like,
yeah.
Weirdly, like, there's like five bang.
Yeah.
She's got like five.
Like, if I had bangs, like, actually, if I had actual bangs, my bangs would be thin and weird like that.
I think you could do it. But that's neither here.
That's a different podcast, guys. Tune into our Bang Bang podcast. Different.
Different, not that comedy bang.
No, not that bang bang.
Yeah.
Just like hair bang bang.
Yeah. Okay, here's my other trivia question. Ready?
Okay.
What other award-winning actor was approached for the lead role in The Omen? You probably know this.
I did hear about this. Was it Robert Duvall?
No, but that would be cool.
Yeah, I don't know who it was.
William Holden.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so, what's interesting is that he, so he's done, like, Bridge on the River Kwai, Sabrina, mm-hmm. That old William Holden. So, that old William Holden. But he, what's cool about him is that he, well, what's interesting about it is that he ended up doing the sequel.
Oh.
So he turned it down, I guess, saying that he didn't want to be in, like, a devil movie or something. Like, I think he thought it was going to be, like, a schlocky horror film.
Uh-huh.
Even though it was, I mean, like frankly, the, what's the director's name? He didn't have, I'll think of it in a second, or I'll cheat by looking it up.
Yeah.
He didn't have a huge repertoire at the time. This was his, like, break. He directed a couple things with some named actors in it.
Richard Donner,
thank you. But this is Richard Donner's, like, breakout movie.
Yeah.
So, like, he didn't, and then the screenwriter had, like, not a ton of previous. It was interesting because what it said was, like, Richard Donner wanted to make this movie.
Uh-huh.
Like, he came up with the premise for this movie, and he hired the screenwriter to write it, and it took the screenwriter a year to write it, and then he made it.
Huh.
So he had enough movies under his belt that people were like, okay, you can do that.
Huh.
But it's interesting that he chose a screenwriter that wasn't, like, super known.
Yeah.
But yeah, so then, but even approaching William Holden and Gregory Peck, like, what huge name actors, what clouty, like, known for acting-y roles actors, and they weren't, like, blockbuster actors, they were, like, they were Academy actors.
Yeah.
And
well,
so...
Gregory Peck agreed to do it because his son died. His son committed suicide, yeah, and so
what?
He had agreed to do this movie as, like, some kind of,
That's a fucked up tribute.
Yeah, it is a fucked up tribute, but it was some kind of, like, he saw the script or something and was like, yeah, I like the tone of this or something. Yeah.
That's fascinating. Yeah, so I guess I think it's so funny, like, the sequel... Like, you turn down the original because you think you don't want to be in a horror movie, and then it ends up being super successful.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, because it was successful, but like SNL parodied it and stuff. Yeah. Like they did the ointment. That was their parody of it. And then like, but like, and so then you agree to do the sequel. That's like never a good idea, dude. Yeah. You missed the boat. Go find a new boat.
Yeah. Don't jump on this one too late.
I watched the first like 10 minutes of The Omen 2. I didn't turn it off because I was like, F this. I turned it off because I had stuff to do and I didn't really want to watch The Omen 2. I was just like mildly curious. But it did involve the exorcist from the original one getting buried alive in sand in the first, like, 10 minutes.
Whoa! I can't remember which omen it is. It's either 2 or 4, I think, that are in... they're filmed in the Museum of Science and Industry. There's an elevator scene.
The second one is in Chicago.
Yeah. Then it is the second one.
Oh, I'm going to watch it
because there's the scene where there's like a janitor or somebody that gets killed and he's in the elevator in the Museum of Science, or he's like near the elevators and you can clearly see it's like this big colorful elevator going up and down. But yeah, it's cool.
That's cool.
Yeah. Annalise, thank you so much for coming and talking to me about The Omen.
Yeah, it was really fun, man.
Yeah. If we were to catch you around Chicago or online, where do we find you? Or your work?
Come see, if you, I just one of the touring companies at Second City, we're about to have a holiday show that's going to run in the Up Comedy Club, so come see that. We're writing it all ourselves. It's going to be super funny. Mm-hmm. Or if not, I tend to direct all over town and like the, you know, your classics, your annoyance, your pub house. just... watch for me. I don't know.
Yeah.
When a Facebook invite comes your way and you see the director's Annalise Toft, know that's probably going to be real dumb. And go see it.
Thanks so much, Annalise. Yes. Bye. Bye.